It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Okay, right on time. A Sabres winning streak. I'm sorry. Mike Shope here. Glad to have you. Bulldog is off again today, and he'll be off Monday, I think, before returning after that. Although Tuesday, the day I'm expecting him back, is April Fool's Day, so I'm not sure what to expect. Joining me now on the West Hur Hotline, expected Buffalo founder Chad DeDominicis to talk some Sabres. Chad, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I wasn't even sure earlier today, just by instinct, like if the Sabres are mathematically alive, but are they dead? I realized the problem I was having is that I was dead about it all, but you know, 10, 11 games left, 9 points, they can't be eliminated left. Not every game is going to be Columbus against Detroit. So you went ahead and tweeted like that they were still in it, and I assume with some sarcasm, but just want to say how dare you.
I think the money puck chart that they put out all the time, they actually got themselves back on the chart though today. They're back at 0.1%, I think. So
I was looking for that. I didn't see it, but the other day I noticed they were not even shown, which is what made me wonder. They're right back in it. Chad, how will this season be for you, assuming they do fall short, for how annoying it is? I mean, there's the accumulation of the years that just that becomes so much of how we react to it. It's been so long. But won't with the five-on-five play and, you know, Thompson's year and maybe a few other things, a couple of other guys having career years, this might be right near the top of seasons in this drought for, I mean, just you can't believe it almost.
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, it's not as bad as other years, I guess you could say. But the year they missed by a point, like it was just like the goaltending. I don't think it's like that this year. A lot of their 5-on-5 numbers as a team, for the most part, are not great. Like their expected goal share, they're near the bottom still, like 28th. Their shot share, they've always been near the top, and that's because early in the season they were spamming, you know, low danger shots, and that's kind of carried them. But even that has started to dip. But it's really the scoring and the goal differential. Goal differential of 5-on-5, you know, they're 15th in the league, so the 51%. They're one of the highest scoring 5-on-5 teams in the league. They're actually second in the league behind the Capitals, which is insane. But really, it's the, you know, we're back again. The goaltending, you know, they are 27th in goals against per 60 at 5-on-5. So it's the goaltending, the defense. It's those things that are back up again. And, of course, you know, special teams, power play, penalty kill, runs hot and cold. But really, it's the power play from the very beginning has been just dreadful. And this is the second year in a row of that. And that, maybe for me, is the most frustrating thing is that's what you hoped would improve under Ruff. And then you brought in Appert, which really bringing in Appert, you're kind of getting what they had in the AHL, but that's, you know, a different conversation. But, yeah, I think the power play really is the most frustrating because if that was just maybe a little bit better, maybe you don't lose 13 games and you're maybe on the playoff spot, but maybe instead of 9 and we're joking around about 0.1%,
right?
Maybe you're 4.
Right.
And, like, you know, if we get lucky here, get on a run, and everybody ahead of us is losing games, you know, but yet here we are.
It's still not close enough to be that, yeah. The power play thing, it really is confounding with the new head coach, but also, like, this, the talent is kind of obvious. Last year, too, that you would think you would have enough, you know, scoring talent to be able to, I don't know, maybe this is naive, I guess it is, overcome whatever structural deficiencies you have.
No, it's not a talent issue at all. And, yeah, I mean, the best example of it is look at Dylan Cousins, who looks like he could not be a power play player at all on this team. He goes to Ottawa for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden he's this power play merchant and has all these power play points. And even the one power play goal Ottawa scored against the Sabres, like, oh, man, that's a nice play. Like, you rarely, if ever, maybe once a month or once every 3 months, see that kind of play from the Sabres. And, you know, Appert in the beginning of the year said, you know, we're not going to sit and just feed Tage for bombs, but really the strategy was like, we're just going to give it to Tage and Dahlin and shoot and hope, and we'll mix in some, you know, nice plays here and there. And it just, it doesn't work. You know, they're not scoring, obviously. They're expected goals per 60 at the power play is 28th in the league, so it's pretty bad. I think there was a joke at the beginning of the year. They were actually a negative goal differential team on the power play at one point. That was very early in the season, but still, that was the thing. So, yeah, pretty bad and frustrating with the talent that they do have.
You definitely don't want that. And when you have that, you're at a game and the Sabres are playing somebody who takes a penalty, and somebody around you hear say, decline the penalty, and then you have you have the whole eye roll thing and just the whole dance. Chad DeDominicis, my guest here on WGR. On goalies, Luukkonen, like, is this just more throw your hands up? This is goaltending in the NHL. We know the randomness of it is just impossible, almost impossible to overcome. What better explanation would you have for his season?
I don't think I do, to be honest. You know, the way I put it, we've done a lot of work with goaltenders over the last 3 years on the site. You know, Anthony's done a few things about kind of the randomness of it. You know, last year I really dove into stuff because of the Levi thing that blew up on their face. And it's really, there's only 3 to 4 goaltenders in this league that are going to be consistently year in, year out, top great goaltenders. And, you know, for the people that are saying, well, they should go out and they should spend, you know, and get a goaltender, a trade for a goaltender, like, I don't really think you need to do that, because unless you're getting one of the top guys, which you're not, you're just getting another version of Luukkonen. In some sense, it could be a more expensive version. I mean, the way the goaltenders are getting contracts right now, $4.75 million is not that bad for a goaltender, especially what he's giving you. So really, you got to hope that he bounces back. A lot of the smart people on social media kind of point to Gustafson in Minnesota. You know, maybe you get that track. Really good season, got paid pretty bad last year, and now he's back to having a really strong season again. And that's just the up and downs of goaltending. And you just have to hope that, you know, the down years are not as down as this season is for him, and it's more in the middle, and then your up years are closer to what you got last year. And, you know, you kind of just ride that wave. And, of course, improving your defense will help that. You know, it's so, yeah, I mean, Reimer takes over right now. And maybe that's kind of the frustrating thing, too, in the beginning of the season. You know, if you didn't waive Reimer and you kind of just kept him and Devon Levi didn't drown for a month, you know, maybe you have a couple more points on the board, because he has shown he's plenty capable. And funny enough, Anthony's research project, like 2 years ago, like, Reimer graded out as one of the more consistent goaltenders year in and year out of what you're getting. And we're kind of seeing that this year. He's not great, He's not terrible either. He's kind of just in the middle of the pack, and that's what he is once again for them this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, Chad, like, it's so easy to pile on the Sabres, and there are reasons to do it. These goalie moves they've made for several years, I've had a hard time being critical. Not that I'm wanting to be necessarily. It's just sort of, I get it. I thought Comrie, like, I get it. And you made the point that Adams has made, Kevin Adams, and I've made it, that you don't really know what you're getting. You know, you think you're getting this, but you're getting that. And that's sort of the nature of the position. So other than sort of just pushing Levi in right out of college, and maybe I'm not even sure they really expected that to work, but that's what they did. And it cost them last year. So otherwise, though, like even paying Lukanen, right? Like even paying him they did after last year, I guess I want to say it made sense.
Yeah, and I mean, really, if you think about it, like I said, they got in at the right time. I mean, Kevin Lankinen was a goaltender who went into camp on a PTO, then got a job, full-time job, got a job in Vancouver off of that.
Yep.
And then 4 months later, he has a $5.25 million contract. You're like, whoa. So, like, you know, maybe it did make sense to do it when they did. You might not love the 5 years, but that contract isn't immovable. If it really gets to a point where it's not working, you know, you can get out of that. And you have Levi, and they brought another goaltender over. They just signed today, and we'll see how that goes in a few years. But, yeah, I mean, it's in the way to get one of those top guys is to just draft them. So, really, it kind of almost like this joking running back joke is you should probably draft a goalie every year because you don't really know. And you just flush your system with them, and maybe one pops out for you, and you get an elite one in there, and then you ride that for 10 years.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you kind of find the best average goaltender you can and hope you get more ups than you do downs.
Even historically, thinking about the Sabres, like what was Ryan Miller? Like a fifth-round pick or something like that, wasn't
it? I think, yeah, fifth or sixth, yeah.
What was Hasek? Like kind of a throwaway trade with Chicago. I don't know when he was drafted, but that wasn't like a big move when they got him, and he's the best ever. So I'm listening to this take for sure. So one thing I've been saying is just with going back to before the deadline, signing Zucker, signing Greenway, signing Bryson. I mean, that leaves Reimer as their only UFA, I believe. What do you think? Right. What do you think of the strategy here? If it can be made into one strategy, like individually, I think my opinion individually, I couldn't understand why you would do each thing. Maybe Bryson least of all, but the two forwards. But yeah. I worry for just how that means less flexibility in the offseason. And I don't want this to be sarcastic, right? Because somebody could easily say, well, if you're the Sabres, what do you need flexibility for? Like, who's going to sign here? I don't want to sort of settle for that.
Right.
How do you see it?
Yeah, it's a tough path to go down. Because, like you said, people don't want to hear it, but it's also, at the same time, it's a real thing. So, I mean, you have to understand that and appreciate it. And then also the way the no move and no trade clauses in the league, that I guess you could say gotten out of hand in a sense, that makes it more difficult too. So you kind of have to really attack those guys in a sense that are like Josh Norris or even a little bit younger maybe that don't have those second contracts or RFAs, and you can go look for a team that's looking to just make a swap, like a Bo Byron kind of thing, something like that. Look for those guys, and that's how you have to go about it and you have to do it. I mean, this team – you know, really, you mentioned flexibility. Like, they can be as flexible as they want to be. There's ways to get out of things. There's ways to make trades. Like, a lot of people, you know, made you believe that Cousins didn't have much value, and then, oh, look what he got you.
Yep.
So you can find your trades if you really want to. It's just how eager and willing do they want to be. What is going to happen with a few guys? Like, Paterka is an interesting one who – you know, there's been a lot of rumors out there that maybe there's some unhappiness on his side. I kind of heard the opposite of that, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out. That could just be an agent thing because his agent's a little bit, you know, one of the more outspoken agents, I guess, the way I'll put it.
Okay.
So that could be that to drive up that contract negotiation. But that's going to be interesting to see where that goes and what they want to do with him in the offseason, and then that kind of sets up. And it gets to Byram. I mean, the Chikrin thing that happened, you know, I get it that Byram's not a UFA this year. He's an RFA, but he's pretty close to UFA status. And, you know, I put a tweet out, if you look at Owen Power, his camp is within, you know, they're right to point to that. And I think Owen Power got a little bit over 9% of the cap hit at the time he signed it. And then 9.4 whatever percent of the cap hit at $95 million works out to $9 million. Who here wants to pay Bo Byram $9 million? I don't want to pay him $8 million. I don't even really want to pay him $7 million, because the last month has shown that, you know, away from Dahlin, here and there, there's some good moments, but for the most part, it's been pretty dreadful.
It's buried.
So do you want to pay somebody $7.5 million to $8 million or more to just be a Dahlin partner? You can throw almost anybody there and be fine. So there's some big decisions, but, I mean, they can be really as flexible as they want to be, depending how deep they want to get into, you know, restructuring this roster.
But Byram worries me. Well, you didn't say you were worried, but he worries me too, I was going to say, because it feels like the kind of player who's good enough and they traded for him. Kevin Adams has alluded to this trade many times since since he made it, about like the hockey trade aspect of it. And I thought it was a fine idea. But if it helps them lead them to a conclusion that they should make him the next whatever, all these defensemen they've signed for such long term and for so much money, I mean, I would just hate it. Okay, that it's hard, it's challenging to get guys, and here you've got a guy who may or may not want to stay. But especially if I have to overpay him to be the player, no. I mean, it's just an easy no.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. And I get your whole point if they traded for him, and, you know, that Adams has mentioned him, but I would not be surprised if he's not on the team next season. I think there's a reason that they're pulling him away from Dahlin randomly. They didn't just do it just to do it when that was working so well. I think they're trying to get an answer on something, and they're probably getting their answer, and it might lead them to do something else. And I think really if it came down to a decision, to be perfectly honest, between Byram and Paterka, they probably lean Paterka, and then that might force him to something else with Byram. And, you know, maybe you swing Byram for a team who's looking to get rid of a top four vet. They want to bring in a younger guy and, you know, somebody who believes that he's a power play guy, which I don't think he really is. But if someone wants to think that he is, then, you know, let them take him, let them pay him, and you take the veteran that has a year or two left and put him in your top four, and then you're on your way.
Assuming your guess, or even, you know, your knowledge on this is right about what they're doing with Byram, it still doesn't work for me, like, looking back at it. Like, the right move, if you had to feel this way, but the right move was to trade him at the deadline, and I got to think that would have been possible. Even with an RFA status, I mean, the guy is young, and so the next team could think he might be a building block and to help them this year. So, I don't know. Yeah. The way you put it, do the Sabres really need this answer on him?
I don't know. I think maybe it's validation. I do think, like, I'm pretty sure that they had conversations surrounding him. I do know that he was part of the Elias Pettersson conversations when they had that. He was one of the pieces that they were going to put in that deal if that was to happen. So his name was out there. I think they had conversations about it. But I think what their focus was and what they ultimately got done is they identified the core piece they wanted to change, which was Cousins, and that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to change this core, in a sense, send a message, rip a core piece out of there. If you're trading Byram and you keep Cousins, that's not really sending a message of I'm ripping a core piece out.
No, that's right.
So I think they focused on Cousins, and they figured let's get some more clarifying answers on Byram by moving some things around, and then they can, you know, go at it in the offseason. I don't think it's going to change anything. The same team that would have traded for him in March probably still be interested in June or July. So
okay.
I don't think that really hurts them that much.
I wondered about that because, like, other teams are getting this answer too, right? And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but some of his numbers, I think, too, there's a couple things. One, there are teams that will 100% believe, well, it's the Sabres, get him here, he'll be fine. He was a big part of what he was in Colorado on a good team in their cup run. He also has the offensive numbers. So any general manager is going to see his 5-on-5 production. They're going to see how he played on the power play in Colorado, his skating and all. So he has the flashiness where they'll be like, yeah, I get it. His defense maybe isn't that good, but we have a guy here. We'll put him with him, and we'll, in a sense, surround him and do all that. So I think there's enough tools and there's enough stuff that you can just watch. And, of course, points are still a big thing in this league that will make him still to be a valuable piece in the offseason.
Reminds me of Montour a little bit in certain ways.
A little bit, yes.
You know? Bring him to us. He's got the Buffalo stink on him. Just bring him over here. We're going to do this. Which team making the playoffs this year, if the Sabres are not to, will be the most annoying? I would say for me, like it's been the Islanders like five different years for this. Not even that good. I mean, I'm jealous of all of them. I said at the beginning of the show today, I hate it. Ranges between 31 and 32 NHL teams. Which team will drive you the craziest if they make it?
Probably whoever ends up at Wild Card 2 in the East because they're a terrible team.
Canadians?
Whoever, Canadians, Islanders, Rangers. I mean, on it looks like the pace right now is 87, but I'm telling you that Wild Card 2 team is going to be like 85 points. And it's going to be ridiculous that they're even in. But they're going to play the Capitals. I'm like,
maybe win.
I don't know. Right. I mean, the Capitals, like, I heard you talking about them earlier, and I agree to an extent. Some of their team underlying numbers are more impressive. So, I mean, that kind of leads me to believe they'll be fine and they'll get through the first round at least, especially the team they're going to line up against most likely. Because none of these teams also are walking in with, like, a powerhouse goaltender that's going to really – oh, well, I guess the Rangers could. But beyond that, I don't really think you have to worry about that. But, yeah, I guess the Wild Card 2 team, beyond that, I don't know.
That has to be
it. The Blues would be annoying because, like, I don't know, was Bennington going to try to fight people in a series or something like that? Like, but beyond that, it's probably the Wild Card 2 team in the East.
Yeah, that's it. Ottawa has separated a little bit, and whoever it is, it'll be a pretty easy argument that the Sabres might be better. Bottom line, might be better than that team. Okay, well, let me just ask you honestly, should we still be hopeful?
Like in the future?
For this season. Is there any, I mean, I know what I'm asking by this question, but sweep the weekend and then what?
That's what I keep telling people. Win both games this weekend, maybe you get a couple more losses and the team's ahead of you, and then, I don't know, if you're sitting 5 or 6 points out, maybe, but I mean, look at the schedule I'm coming to, it's not the easiest. So, I mean, and this team always does this. They'll get within, like, well, you know, you get a couple games, and they'll lose three in a row, and they're like, well, there goes that.
Just like it happened right after the tournament, right, where, like, a little bit talked ourselves into them making a run, and they lost those two Canadiens games.
Yeah. So. I think, like, to get to 85 points, they have to go 10-1. So if that gives you your answer.
10-1, baby. That's how that's how these things have to end. They have to end spectacularly. Like the Bills ending the drought with a minus 50 point differential and just like getting blown out and starting Peterman, yet that's the year they make it. For the Sabres, it has to be like this. Like the last time they made it, it was a little bit like this. So, all right. Thank you, Chad.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
ExpectedBuffalo.com, Chad DeDominicis, our guest. I know. I can't see. This is the problem Bulldog and I both face all the time about the Sabres. Like, even to sort of ask the question is like, I feel just imagining someone driving in their car being like, show, really, again? But how would you handle it if it's like your kid's team? Play to the whistle. And we haven't heard the whistle yet. So Flyers tomorrow, an actually mediocre Washington team that leads the conference, if not the NHL in points. I don't know. 803-0550 to comment. NFL draft as well. Yesterday I did baseball. It was really fun hearing from.
Abdul Carter's going to go before the New England Patriots pick at 4. It'd be an upset right now if Abdul Carter made his way to number 4. I would handicap Abdul Carter right now as the likely pick at number 2 today. We reserve the right to change our mind. A lot of things change, but the way this is shaking out to me, it looks like he's tracking to be a Brown, and let's see how it plays out.
Adam Schefter. I get it. I mean, Carter and Travis Hunter both sound like uniquely gifted non-quarterbacks. It happens that the Browns and the Giants even with the Giants doing what they've done in free agency, could still use like a franchise guy. So that'll be a fun one to track. I can certainly believe that, like Sal was saying yesterday, it kind of comes down to how they feel about Shedeur Sanders. Because if you liked Sanders enough, you would just do that, especially Cleveland, with a guarantee that they'll get one of the top two guys if they want one. Instead, maybe they do this, and then round two or later for a rookie. There's every reason for the Browns to want to get somebody in there through this draft, even if it's like more of a middling prospect than Sanders. We'll see. Month away. It's Thursday, so kind of not the exact date, but 4 weeks from tonight, we're doing that. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for listening. Bulldog is off through Monday. Talking baseball today a lot, with it being opening day for most teams. Do you have an interesting story about why your favorite team is your favorite? Or even if it's not interesting, I think there are a lot of good ones out there. One caller earlier mentioned that it was his little league team. He was the Reds or something. And so he liked the Reds. And their guy with the Cubs had that fun story about drinking a bottle of champagne that was meant for the Cubs in 1984 had they won the pennant. But they didn't. And local bars had the champagne and just gave it away or something. This guy and a friend agreed that they would not open it until the Cubs won a World Series, if they ever did. They did, 2015, maybe? Whatever year it was. So they get together and they open the champagne, and guess what? It's horrible because it's wine and it's been sitting for 30 years. Whiskey, you're fine, I think. Wine, beer, no. Didn't work out. Let's take your calls again, 803-0550. Pat is next. Hi, Pat.
Hey, so, I grew up, watching the World Series, like, 8, 9 years old, and I'd pick a team I'd like if the Athletics were in it a lot back then. And then 1991, I was 10, and Cal Ripken was having his MVP season, and I was really into it, mostly just reading about it in the paper because the games weren't on TV. But then I just settled in, and I was an Orioles fan. And, growing up, my brother was a Red Sox fan, and my other brother liked the Cubs, and my, friends from around the neighborhood liked the Yankees and Blue Jays, things like that. And then when I was about 14, my Cubs brother fan, got a job in Baltimore, moved out there, and I had stuck with the Orioles the whole time, wearing Orioles hat every summer, and I went down to visit him, and sure enough, Cal Ripken hits 2 home runs. It was my first Major League Baseball game ever in Camden Yards, and it was awesome. So stuck with the Orioles ever since, and, it's been tough lately, but they're on the upswing again now.
They sure are. Good for you for doing that, because I think I would be the type to sort of give up on it. Really would have hated the owner, and once Ripken was out of there, if he was my guy, I think I would have tried. You never know what your heart's going to lead you to, but I think I would have tried to flip, but you didn't, and right now it's a great team to root for.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this young team, so
all right. Good. Thank you, Pat. Baltimore, what are they up to? Leading in Toronto, 9-2 in Toronto today. Yanks have made it 4-1 in their game, bottom seven, against Milwaukee. Next is Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I grew up in the 70s when the Blue Jays were an expansion team, and everybody was a Yankee fan. So I could trade one Greg Nettles or Thurman Thomas for like 20 Roy Howells and Rance Mullnick.
Thurman Munson, but yes, yes, yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I hear you.
So it was an economic thing, and back in those days in grade schools you could flip. And you were like basically gambling cards.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a matter of quantity. And I stuck with the Blue Jays. And then, once they had Jesse Barfield and Joe Carter, Joe Carter won the World Series. I remember watching it in my girlfriend's common area, and been a Blue Jays fan ever since.
Makes sense. The 77 Blue Jays. Well, you threw a couple names in there, Michael. Doug Ault, right?
Yes.
Tough. Those are good tough names. The first Blue Jay team. Clancy was pretty good. I don't know if he was on the first team. I don't know that team perfectly, but by the mid-80s, as we talked about with Mike Wilner a couple days ago, the Blue Jays got really, really interesting. And in the 90s, their wins were different because that was, I mean, all payroll. You had a star in the game who was available. Toronto would get him. Ricky Henderson, Molitor, Winfield, David Cone, Morris, Dave Stewart. Like, they all went to play for the Blue Jays. Really crazy, like, how Toronto was that team in baseball those early 90s, and they won twice. And really, since then, I mean, that's it's just never been like that again. For one team to really dominate, like, legends just all showed up and played. It's probably not the whole list. I said Henderson, right? To show up and play for them. Kind of wild that that happened. Let's go to Ed next. Hello, Ed.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
It's nice and warm here in the 585.
I'm sure it is.
So the reason I'm a Cubs fan is back when I was younger, I had a manufacturing job working 4 p.m. to midnight. And at that time, it was the superstations WGN and WTBS, and I just landed on the Cubs.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Some people play by the rules, but the real game changers break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we're talking to the risk takers, the rebels, and the ones rewriting the playbook. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cub fan for 40 years.
So you know what the thing is about that, Ed? You were in Rochester at that time?
No, I was actually in Phoenix. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think Rochester, because I went to college there, I think they had WGN on their cable and Buffalo didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we had the Braves and the Mets and the Yankees, but we did not have Harry Carey. Like, I didn't ride the Harry Carey ride. And then
I did.
You did, but I think Rochester did. I'm not positive of that, but I was thinking maybe that was true.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I want to mention is I don't know if way back when ESPN at 10 o'clock, Baseball Tonight, and all they did was baseball highlights.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever set my VHS player, and I started recording that every night and watched it when I got home.
Yeah, sure. That was great. Thanks for sharing that. I'm sure Rochester did. Because that's how I first, that's where I was when I first listened to him. And that was a trip. This was like old Harry Carey. Hilarious. Yeah, that had to be, maybe it wasn't on in the 80s, but on Grand Island, we did not have access to the Cubs superstation. Braves, yes. Cubs, no. Here is Wes next. Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
So my favorite team of all time, and it's always been the same, it's never changed, is the Cincinnati Reds. I remember the 1975 World Series. My best friend, who was also 9, he was a Red Sox fan. And a little side note, his older brother actually had a bat that was signed by Johnny Bench when he was playing for the Bisons.
All right.
But Yeah, I like the Reds, and he liked the Red Sox. And, you know, the clip that we've always seen our whole lives of, you know, Carlton Fisk hitting that home run in Game 6 and all of that. But so many people forget that the Reds won the seventh game and won the World Series. And then they went on to sweep the Yankees 4-0 the following year in 1976. And they were just such a dynasty. And yeah, there's been many decades of futile, you know, since then. I guess they won it in 1990. But, yeah, I'll always root for Cincinnati. Being in Buffalo, there was I didn't have anyone else. You know, I was young. The Bills had O.J. Simpson. The Sabres were a new franchise with Gilbert Perreault and all that. But for baseball, you know, it just landed on the Cincinnati Reds for me for some reason.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it makes sense. They were great. I mean, there's always that potential that if you're like that age, 10-ish years old, who's winning? And, I mean, Cincy was great all those years, 70 through, I mean, the whole decade kind of was like the Reds were really good or great. Bench has a great signature, by the way. The caller mentioned his friend having a bench bat. Johnny Bench has a beautiful signature. Have the Reds kind of won the poll today? There isn't a poll, but the Reds maybe have been named more than any other team as a favorite team. And it's not all for the same reason. Like it's bench or it's 70s or, you know, just family. That's my first favorite team. I've had like seven, but my first favorite team was the Reds, family stuff. And yeah, it's kind of been funny how many people have mentioned the Reds. One more here. Rob is next. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I kind of have a weird one. So I'm a diehard baseball fan. I love watching baseball. I collect cards. I buy and sell cards. I'm super into baseball. But I've never had a lifelong favorite team. So I'm 42 years old. I grew up. And everyone around here, Western New York, at least the people I knew and my dad especially, were diehard Yankees fans.
Sure.
So I watched a lot of Yankees games as a kid in the 90s and all that. And I found myself hating the Yankees somehow. I just hated the payroll thing and just buying the teams and all that. And so I guess I liked the Yankees early a little bit, but I kind of ended up hating them. And I was in college, early 2000s, 2003, 2004. I lived with a guy in Buffalo who was a diehard Red Sox fan. And we moved in together early in the summer of 2004. And diehard Red Sox fan all year. And by chance, we went to visit his sister who was going to college in Boston. And we were there during for like two or three of the games when the Red Sox made that crazy comeback against the Yankees.
All right.
And so that was obviously mega exciting, and you know, being with a diehard Red Sox fan, I kind of found myself also rooting for them during that period and all that. But and then in like 2017, I got into I guess back into when I was a little kid buying and selling baseball cards, and I got real into that, and specifically like the prospecting and the Bowman products. And the first guy, the first product I went in on kind of heavy. 2017 Bowman, and it had Ronald Acuna, first Bowman prospect cards, and he was kind of the first player that I really invested in heavily, prospect heavily, and really got into. And then through him, I kind of became a Braves fan, and I've kind of been, you know, quietly rooting for the Braves ever since, and rooting for Acuna to kind of, you know, not get injured every season.
Well, I mean, when he's good, who's better? But, yeah, like he's had a couple of bad injuries. Cool, Rob. Going from the Yankees to the Red Sox would be an interesting one to experience. Like you're the anti-Johnny Damon as a fan. But it happens organically just through people connections and just different ways. So thanks for sharing. Got a break here and a little bit of time only left before we get to pregame coverage, Sabres and Penguins. But we'll do what we can with it. Mike Schoep here. Bulldog is off. This is W. Hi, I'm Mike Schoep. Thanks for being with me. Bulldog is off this week. I'll be sure to say a lot of things about him, things that I won't say in front of him. But I'm going to make you wait a little bit for that. We will talk to Sal today and also Tyler Dunn. It is 1 month from the draft. I'll consider that, you know, an occasion. Don't need a reason, but I'll make it one to talk about the draft today. I know the show prior to mine, lots of people were calling in about the draft. Maybe, I always say this, but you get to a point, maybe it's now, maybe it was last week, maybe it was 2 months ago, maybe it'll be the day of, maybe it'll never happen, where you have an outcome in the draft that you want. I am having a tough time with that this year because while I think most people would say are saying the same things about the Bills and their needs, like there's pretty much a consensus on that. When it was wide receiver mania in here, this giant board beside me that the morning guys made and stuck, you know, the names up, trying to figure out our favorites, we were all about that last year. It ended up at Keon Coleman. But, you know, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, these other candidates for the Bills at receiver as post-Diggs trade and then Davis leaves, it kind of felt, okay, they're going to have to do this now. We wanted it for, a lot of us wanted it for a couple of years, didn't happen. They drafted Kincaid as kind of like a, I don't know, a compromise with the wide receiver train enthusiasts. And then last year, I mean, they kind of gutted it. So it was time for, you know, a blue chip prospect, which, you know, is in theory what they got in Coleman. He was the 33rd pick of the draft. He was the 8th receiver taken last year. So not exactly, you know, the most blue chip, if you will. But when we had these receiver debates, it was lively because it was not unanimous that the Bills, A, should draft a receiver early, or B, would. You know, it's not, you never know what they're going to do, and the draft has to sort of get going before things become clearer. You know, boards can dry up, whatever. So you won't know before the draft, whatever. It was not unanimous that they should do it. And I say that thinking about how last year, this is a point we've talked about a lot, they really thrived when they shifted, this is 2023 now, from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady and became more built around the run. And it worked for them, so will they draft a receiver? Should they draft a receiver? All of that sort of in the framework where they didn't really get a lot from Diggs or Davis, hardly anything from Davis, after that coordinator change and Diggs, his production tailed off, but they still won every week until the playoff loss to Kansas City. So will they do it? This year, the consensus is really, you know, decided. Like, it's defense. And it makes perfect sense. They have been drafting offense up top the last couple of years. Their defense really fell off. Their pass defense really fell off, and it hurt them badly. That's what's maybe a little bit ironic about the Kansas City loss in the playoffs is, like, it's one thing, and they've lost them four times now in the postseason the last 5 years. But it's one thing to sort of think about Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid and a loss to the Chiefs, an inability to stop the Chiefs can always make sense. But it was a year where Kansas City's offense just did not really perform. And yet against the Bills in the playoffs, they did. So defense is kind of obvious for the Bills. They don't have a starting corner, it seems, right now. Interior defensive line, and really any kind of playmaker position. Plus, it sounds like a draft where that's really for when the Bills pick 30 and then twice late in round two. That's really where the talent is, you know, there on defense. So it's both. It's these are your needs. This is what's available in the draft. And, you know, the last couple of years drafting pass catchers, all the more reason to think that's where we end up here. The challenge I'm having in talking about this every day is I don't think I care who or what it is. And, you know, that can be me just being lazy, but I'm being real too. Like, different traits, different sizes. Bulldog likes the bigger defensive tackle versus the smaller one. You know, corner can be, what is their arm length? All these kind of different physical traits or even intangibles that you can make it about. But I don't really have that much of a preference because I think, this is my excuse anyway, because I think it's kind of all the same for what it means to their chances. You need a couple of starters, at least one, and they'll end up with one somehow, either in the draft or, you know, another way. They'll get there. And then, you know, they'll roll the ball out in week one, and Josh Allen presumably will be the quarterback, and their offense will probably, because of that, be really good. And, you know, defensively, last year they were down. They won 13 games and another two playoff games. You know, it's like how much – we'll see what happens. But as you try to project it, how much of a difference does a first-round pick, pick 30 at defensive tackle, make versus pick 30 at corner versus pick 30 at edge? I don't know. Like, to me, it's not enough to get super like locked in on a certain player or even a certain position when it comes to defense. So that's me. I mean, receiver is always like exciting to think about, but having drafted Coleman and even signing Joshua Palmer after having drafted Kincaid, I just doubt they would start this draft that way. Plus it being a year where not that many people, relatively speaking, are that excited about the receiver options. I mentioned I have Tyler Dunn later. So golongtd.com is his site. And he's got, from Bob McGinn, longtime NFL writer who covered the Packers, who's part of Tyler's team at GoLongTD. He's got a long breakdown and ranking of the top receivers. I've never been more spooked by the idea of, you know, a first round pick for one of these guys than today, having read that. Like, it's anonymous scouts, but the guy's got, I mean, McGinn's been around a long time, and, you know, by extension, Tyler, not questioning him at all, but if you've got anonymous scouts who are going to say, you know, things, obviously things that you wouldn't want to put your name on, like Luther Burden. So I do these PFF, I haven't done one in a few days actually, but I've done a few of these PFF mock drafts, and a couple times it came to be the Bills pick at pick 30, and you've got kind of the usual names on defense, but then there's Luther Burden, who is wide receiver. Should we count Travis Hunter? Let's count Travis Hunter. Like three or four. It's Hunter, who also plays corner, of course, and then it's Tet McMillan almost always next. And after that, you have three or four different names depending on your cup of tea. So Burden, a couple of times, came up for me in these mock drafts. You know, I want the A. I want a receiver too, but I want the grade for posterity. I want to make a pick that PFF is going to like, which shouldn't be that hard given that they're ranking the players and telling you their favorites. It really shouldn't be that hard. So Luther Burden, okay. I mean, he's up there. I know the name from these receivers and the combine and everything else. But then I read the thing at Tyler's website. The mom is a problem. It's written. The girlfriend is his manager. The mom is a problem. He's a good player, whatever that means. He's a good player on Saturday. He's very ordinary Monday through Friday. I mean, there are these kind of comments about a lot of these guys. Even McMillan, who is outside of Hunter, and I just say it that way because he also plays corner, but like everybody's wide receiver one, pretty much. Really immature, poster child for this NIL. Just like a, what is it? There was one line. The stuff on film this year, that's just gross. Like this is the best receiver in the draft. Different than recent years, eh? So I kind of like the idea because I always do, and I think the Bills could really benefit. But today I got a little scared because the class is just not as hot. Apparently, the mom is a problem. I just now you're telling me something here. So I mean that's just one article. But I think it's unlikely that the Bills do this anyway, and it leaves me just kind of like, I don't know, bored for what the draft can be. I mean, really, what could happen? I mean, teams make trades. The Bills have done plenty of that in the draft over the years. Little ones to move up for, you know, Kyrie Elam and Dalton Kincaid, bigger ones to get to Allen, and then Tremaine Edmonds. Like, just there's been lots of action from the Bills, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I love that. I don't love trading up generally, but like that my team's sort of in the game, right? But at 30, what, like, even last year with, I think it would have been Brian Thomas, who ended up going to Jacksonville and being great for Jacksonville. I know the idea of the Bills trading up to get him came up a lot in here, and I definitely was against that. But that guy looks like a home run for the Jaguars at their pick. And I don't know, is there any reason, you tell me if you think so, because I would love to have it. Is there any reason to think about the Bills moving up here? Like, for who? To draft a different defensive lineman? To draft a different corner? I mean, maybe. When the Bills got, they're not all the same. I'm coming at this from a standpoint of, like, we don't know who's going to be good, right? Like, neither do the Bills. So that's part of, you could have, like, a serious conviction on one of the D linemen or one of the corners and not the other. But, I mean, I think that's kind of rich. I mean, because traits-wise, sure, but we're just not going to know how they're going to be as pros. So I tend to stay away from that. But if you did have that, you can get serious about, well, they should make this move to get to Kenneth Grant or Amos or whoever it is you want from the first round. And okay, I mean, again, like, if you're listening to this and thinking, like, this is absolutely what should happen, talk to me. I mean, I'm not a trade-up guy, but let's hear the argument. I just think so much depth and, I don't know, what the other words might be for it, for me to think, like, that's probably not worth it. But, I always think that when it comes to trading up. And then trading down, that was last year's thing. The Bills had traded up a couple of times, a few times, like I just mentioned, and they got to last year's draft, and, all right, we didn't need this pick for Worthy. Kansas City, go ahead. Then we didn't need the pick that they traded to Carolina. Okay, ends up on Coleman. And as I've said about that many times, I think that's all fine. I think the best thing about how they set that up would be to trade down a third time, with there being Coleman, McConkey, Polk, Mitchell, other guys at the top of the overall class. I mean, you had still a few receivers to pick from. And you have all day Friday. I don't know, I can't assume it was possible to do it, but you'd think so. All day Friday to make one more move and get something else out of your draft capital. And that's what the Bills didn't do, ultimately just making the pick for Coleman. So, I don't know. It doesn't mean they won't trade down this year, but would they want to trade? It's kind of an interesting thing to think about, trading out of the first round like they did. I mean, there's a certain clout to the first round pick, and, you know, you have the press conference and there's his jersey, we're all smiling, and here's your number one pick. You go down in history as that, and Coleman comes in instead as the first pick of round two. So the Bills do not have quite the same, just doesn't have quite the same energy or clout, again, to use that word, as even the last pick of the first round would. So would the Bills, does it have to matter? No. But would they maybe want to get out of the first round for a second year in a row? Like, I don't know, I guess in a vacuum, I would tend to doubt it. 803-0550, here's John with us. Hi, John.
How you guys doing today? I hope you're doing well. I'm actually of the opinion that we're going to go up the board and try to get the Bruce Smith of this draft. I think we have enough draft capital to just go get the one or two things we need to make a push for the Super Bowl. I think we've been so lacking on defensive pressure. I think we sold out for an aging Von Miller. We're selling out for an aging Joey Bosa. What does it take to get us to two, to three, to four, to
Not possible? No. To get to the top five?
Second, like, what gets us there?
To the top five?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing gets us there.
No. There's no way to do it with draft picks. I mean, if you wanted to trade a couple of starters or something and a bunch of draft picks, then maybe. But not realistic, in my view.
Not realistic? So if he falls to five or six, there's no way we make a push to go get him?
It's not possible. You can make you make the push, make all the push you want, but who do you mean? Carter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know, John. I doubt he gets to five, but maybe. But I don't know. Show me I'm wrong. Like, he doesn't have to work exactly like the simulators. But we did a couple in here where I offered I'm the Bills. I offered two complete years of draft picks to have some fun imagining getting to Travis Hunter, and I was told no. So I don't think there's any way you can do that. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't trade up at all, right, to somewhere in the middle of the first round, I guess, to get – you know what? This is really kind of the point. I haven't even opened one of those draft chart value things yet this year. It's still a month away, in my defense, I guess. But I haven't even opened the Jimmy Johnson chart. Let me just do that right now. Draft, NFL draft. This is when Bulldog would talk. NFL draft value chart. You know, there's different ones. I guess PFF would have its own. I'm on, first one that comes up for me is Draft Tech. All right, so let's make it we, right? We're in this together. Why doesn't that come easily? We pick 30th, 620 points in value, according to drafttech.com. So the caller wants top five. I mean, that's at the minimum. To get to Abdul Carter, that would be Jacksonville at 1,700. So that's all of my picks, which is never going to happen, and then something else from next year would be like equivalent in this. So again, like that's not happening. But I don't know. I've not spent much time on the players who come in like 15 to 20. And I hope very much the Bills don't do this. But if you were to look at this same chart, something like pick 30 and pick 62, their own second. They still have Minnesota's second as well through Houston from the Diggs trade. It's funny that it's Minnesota because the Bills didn't. That's not from the Bills trade for Diggs with the Vikings, but the Texans got the Vikings pick last year moving around in the draft, and then they traded it to Buffalo. So let's go. Let's say I want to trade 30 and 62, and that gets me to like Seattle at 18. A first and a second to move up 12 spots. And look, I just have to say, I can't wait another second. Never do this. never trade your 30 and 62 for 18 and still draft defense. That would be really dumb. I would be very much against that. What you want in a world where you just, of course, don't know who's going to be good, you want more chances. You want more lottery balls. And that's the opposite of trading the two picks to move up a dozen spots or whatever that would be. People do make, and look, the Bills are a pretty good example. They do make exceptions for quarterbacks. And that's, you know, it's obvious why, because there's so much value there. There's so much riding on it. I've gone back and forth on whether I think that's even smart because, you know, sometimes we get the quarterback position wrong too. Thanks, John. I wish your idea were more realistic because, believe me, I would run with it. I probably still wouldn't want to do it, but at least that's my point kind of overall here about this draft so far for me is I don't really know what I want them to do that I really have any conviction about. You want to draft defense because your defense went the wrong way last year, and offensively you've got most of what you want or what you need with the offensive line pretty stable. And even as Sal has pointed out before, their depth up front, of course, Allen, you know, receiver wise, I think there should be some room for a receiver maybe by round four or at least by round five. But they don't look like a team really primed for that. I want to say, and the class is just kind of mid. So I wouldn't get my hopes up there. So where does that leave you? If that's you, just pick a couple of these guys, defensive players, potential to be starters, Thursday night, Friday night, and go from there. And that is the Thursday night, the opening round, 1 month from today. 803-0550. Glad to have John's call. We'll get into some more, I hope, through the day, talking about the draft and other stuff for the Bills. I want to talk to Sal. We've certainly done some of this, but among other things here coming up next. So James Cook, Christian Benford, still under contract both. Like, these are not guys who are free agents like Douglas is. You know, these guys who are on your roster. But both sort of in position for new contracts. Cook, of course, has been more vocal about it. As far as I know, I haven't seen anything from Benford, but he's probably at that point where they're expecting something for him long-term, big dollars. And I just wonder, so today is March 24th. When does it start to become a concern? Is it already? Like, the Bills have been really good at getting these kinds of things done and getting them done early, like they did this year with Shakir and Rousseau and Bernard. Just kind of like, before you're even thinking about it, this happened with Allen. Not even, I don't mean this time, but like the first big contract, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, already. No drama, no back and forth in the media or anything like that. And it was just done. And I think I want to say from that as a compliment that that's how you'd like to do it. That's how the Bills have been able to do it in these other examples. So I've got Benford and Cook, and I don't have anything now. And I think that doesn't have to be any sort of bad omen, but I kind of wonder if it is, given how smoothly and quickly they've been able to get other deals done. So that and more with Sal coming up after a break. Tyler Dunn today as well. As we get later, Paul Hamilton reflecting on the Sabres weekend. The next game for them is tomorrow night at home against Ottawa. I'm Mike Shope. Glad to have you. Bulldog is off this week. This is WGR.